Welcome back to the Tanakh Study Center series on Nevi'im Rishonim, sponsored by the Sepis Foundation in conjunction with the OU and their Nach Yomi project. In today's shir, our focus will be on Perek Yud Zayin through Chaf Aleph of Shmuel Bet, chapter 17 through 21. We're going to simply focus on a few points in each chapter in order to support the primary themes that we discussed in our earlier shiurim. As you recall, we identified a unit from chapter 10 to 20, which was Chet David Po'onsho, David's sin with Bathsheba, and the ensuing punishment. And we saw the punishment began with the death of his children. We're going to see how that punishment will continue in our study today with the death of Avshalom and how David relates to that death. And again, the overall theme of how we see the hand of God behind all these events, and that being the purpose of Sefer Shmuel, not simply to let the reader know what happened, but more so to let the reader understand the hand of God behind events which he is familiar with. We're going to begin our shir today with a quick look at chapter 17 in Perek Yud Zayin, a very short little parshiyah. You'll notice that there are parshiyah breaks, like little paragraph breaks, which we have in Chumash and all throughout Navi, and those are usually very important, and they can usually indicate a lot about the message of the book. Usually they're similar to a paragraph break, but every once in a while, we're going to find a parshiyah which is way too small to be a paragraph. If you look in Perek Yud Zayin Pasuk Yudalad, if you look in chapter 17, verse 14, you'll notice one pasuk. In that one pasuk, there are two parshiot. We're going to read it now. Vayomer Avshalom v'cho ish Yisrael, tova atzat chushai harki me'atzat achitofel. Avshalom and all the people of Israel said, Chushai's advice is better than that of Achitofel. Then we have a parshiyah break in the middle of a pasuk. And then the second half of the pasuk, Vashem tziva lafer atzat achitofel hatova. God had commanded, in other words, God was behind this decision for them to go against the advice of Achitofel, which is really better. In order to bring upon Avshalom that which was going to be bad or that which would bring him down. What you usually find, if you have a very short parshiyah, way shorter than it should be, anything much shorter than a paragraph, it's usually coming to emphasize or highlight some prophetic point. And here we see a beautiful example of that, where the point that the prophet is making is quite clear. We're telling the story of the advice given to Avshalom by two advisors, one, Achitofel, who's one of the leaders of the revolt together with Avshalom, and the other, Hushai Harki, is pretty much a plant sent in by David to help him from the inside. And the question is going to be whether or not Avshalom should chase David right away, as quick as possible, to put down this revolt, or should Avshalom be more careful, thinking that maybe David might be expecting an attack and being waiting in ambush, because David has a lot of experience at war, in all types of warfare, guerrilla warfare and regular warfare. And therefore, Hushai says, it's much better to wait a couple of days, organize the army, come with a very strong force and full force, and then you'll be able to find David. Both the advice of Hushai and the advice of Avshalom make perfect sense from a military point of view. The only question here is, what is the best advice in this given situation? Because we don't have enough military information, we really don't know for sure which advice was really better. We know in the outcome that there was no doubt that Hushai's advice was not very wise in the end, because David won the battle, and maybe had Avshalom chased David right away, he would not have had time to organize himself, and they would have been able to capture David. But that's not the main point of the way the events are being told in Sefer Shmuel. The highlight of Sefer Shmuel is not to tell you which military advice was better. The highlight is to let you know why it was, why did it come about, and how did it come about that Avshalom took the advice of Hushai and didn't take the advice of Achitofel, even though the advice of Achitofel, as we were told earlier, at the end of chapter 16, that Achitofel's advice was known as to be the best in the country. So if we return to Pasuk Yudalad, we see exactly how the Navi is going to emphasize this point as he records these events, and we look at the second half of the Pasuk, which is its own parshiyah, Vashem tziva lafer tatzat Achitofel, God had commanded for Avshalom to go against the advice of Achitofel, which was Hatovah, which was better in this case, Vavor hevi Hashem al Avshalom et Hara'ah, in order that it should come about that this bad thing would happen to Avshalom and his revolt would fail. I simply wanted to highlight that point to support our entire approach that when we're reading the works of Nevi'im, it's psukim like these that we have to pay attention to, because it's psukim like these that give us a much better idea of why this specific story was written and why it was recorded in the book of Shmuel. Later on in chapter 17, we have the story of Yonatan and Achimatz, who were also planted by David inside to find out what's happening. They're able to go out and bring the message to David, and as they're going out with the message, they're almost caught, and we're told in the end of chapter 17 how they're able to hide themselves and how a lady is able to help them. And what it seems to be that the purpose of telling this story It doesn't affect the plot too much, but it definitely gives the reader the impression that the reason why they were so successful and David was able to survive this revolt and was able to know what to do and expect Avshalom's attack was because of the hand of God behind the success of Achimatz and Yonatan to get the message out. In chapter 18, we begin a different topic. It's the story of the war itself. And the highlight of what's being described in chapter 18 is not only the military side, the battle, but I think it's primarily David being so worried about what will happen to Avshalom. When the battle begins, we're told in Pasuk Hey, how David commands his generals, Yoav and Avishai and Ittai, who are in charge of the three forces, he tells them, Latli lanar Avshalom, take it easy on my son Avshalom, on the boy Avshalom. And everyone else heard him. And it's quite clear that the people know that the last thing David wants to happen is Avshalom to be killed. We also see the hand of God and how Avshalom himself finally dies. Almost in an accidental way, his hair and his head gets caught up in a tree in the middle of a forest. When chapter 19 begins, we get yet another example of the prophetic point of this entire section, where the punishment of David in regard to the loss of his children is going to be one of the primary themes that will be highlighted as the Navi tells the story of the victory. Even though he had just heard that his people had won the battle and his enemies were all defeated, in the beginning of chapter 19 in Pasuk Aleph, in Perek Yutet Pasuk Aleph, we're told about David's behavior. We'll read, Vayirgaz HaMelech, the king got very angry. Vayao Aliyat HaShar, Vayef, he goes up to the top of the gate and he cries. V'chol Amar B'lechto, as he was walking up to the gate, what was he saying? B'ni Avshalom, B'ni, B'ni Avshalom, Mi Tein Muti Ani Tachtecha Avshalom B'ni, B'ni. David is crying and distraught, saying, Oh, my son Avshalom, I wish it would be me instead of you. David would have rather that he died instead of his son Avshalom die. Of course, you don't need a Navi to explain to you why a father is distraught over the loss of a child. That's only natural and only human. But if we return to the theme of this entire unit, after the sin of David, and when Natan HaNavi in chapter 12 told David, Hini mekim ra'am bibitecha, I'm going to bring evil things from within your own home, and your children are going to die. And David knows it's because of the sin with Bathsheba and Uriah, Achiti, that all these terrible things are bound to happen, are about to happen. David, in a certain way, feels guilty for the death of Avshalom. Again, Avshalom decided on his own to revolt. What Avshalom did was wrong and bad. But looking in a deeper sense, David realizes that all these terrible events that are happening, this entire revolution against him, and the fact that there's another civil war between the people, and the fact that Avshalom now is going to die, he's blaming himself for these events. And that only increases his sorrow over what happened. But here again, what's being emphasized by the Navi is the connection between David's sin earlier in chapter 11 and 12 with the story of Uriah Hitti and the outcome of the events where Avshalom is killed and the civil war that took place. Later on in chapter 19, we have a much more detailed discussion about the relationship between Yoav and David. And here we see Yoav almost as a hero. In Pasuk Vav, we're told how Yoav comes to the king and basically gives it to him. And he tells him, you're embarrassing today your supporters, and how can you do such a thing? And he demands that David return to the gate of the city to begin to judge and to take leadership. And he warns him, if he doesn't do that, then he'll do something to David that'll put an end to his entire kingdom. If you look in the end of Pasuk Chet, Ki incha yotzei, if you don't go out to the people and return to your leadership, Bara lechazot, this will be the worst thing that happened to you, Mikol hara asher ba'elecha minurech adata. This will be the worst thing that ever happened to you since the time of our youth until today. Yoav has been with David since the beginning of his hiding away from Shaul. Yoav was one of the leaders with David and his 400 men when he first ran away from Shaul at the very beginning of Sefer Shmuel. So here, David actually listens to Yoav. And we're told in Pasuk Tet, Be'okom HaMelech Ve'eshe Bashar, David got up, the king got up, went back to the gate, began to judge the people again. U'lechol Am Yigidu Le'mor, Hinei HaMelech Yoshev Bashar, the king has finally returned to the Shar, and all the people come and accept him, and now the people are happy again, and David's enemies, those who lost the battle, run away to their tents. If you recall how the whole story of Avshalom began in chapter 15, the story of his revolt, it began when people were coming to the Shar, to the gate of the city for judgment, and David was very passive and wasn't taking leadership. And Avshalom said, if I could only be the judge of the people at the gate and people would come to me for advice, that's how the story began at the Shar. And interestingly enough, when Avshalom dies and the battle is over, David returns to the Shar. It's not the exact same Shar. That was the Shar in Yerushalayim, and this is the Shar in the area where the battle is taking place, on the other side of the Jordan River. But the idea that this story begins with sitting at the shar, and David's passivity, not coming to the shar to judge the people, and now he returns to the shar, I think that gives a bit of closure to the entire unit. This story about how Yoav, in many ways, forces David to return to take leadership and pretty much tells him what to do and how to act, raises a very interesting question about how the book of Shmuel relates to Yoav in general and how David HaMelech relates to Yoav. In many ways, Yoav is more loyal to David than David himself. But over and over again, Yoav and David get into pretty serious arguments over certain types of behavior. It's also interesting to note that the book of Shmuel really doesn't give us a clear-cut picture. Is Yoav a good guy or a bad guy? And I think that's rather intentional because it's not really clear how good or how bad he is. In many ways, you can view him as a hero. And it could be that if all his intentions are really sincere, in many ways, he was the person who saved David's kingdom. On the other hand, if his assassination of Avner earlier and later on, the way he treats Amasa, the way he kills Amasa, if his main goal in all that behavior is simply to remain in power, then in many ways, Yoav is the reason why there's been so much civil war over all these years. So again, Yoav may be the reason for all this civil war and strife, and he may be the person responsible for all the difficult incidents that are happening over the last 10, 20 years of Jewish history. Or Yoav may be the hero who made David HaMelech who he was. We're going to return to this topic soon. But before we discuss Yoav and David and try to get a clear picture of what's happening, we have to continue what happens in the end of Perek Yotet and how it flows into Perek Chaf, which is the story of the revolt of Sheva ben Bichri. In many ways, the end of chapter 19 and the beginning of chapter 20 are the same topic. Why there's a chapter break smack in the middle is not quite clear to me. But the topic really begins in Pasuk Yud, in verse 10 in chapter 19. When the Jewish people, when all the tribes of Israel, probably we're talking about the northern tribes, recognize that they've done an injustice to David by trying to overthrow him. And now they lead the movement to bring him back to power. David also sends messengers to his own tribe in Yehuda that they should also be there to bring him back. David's main intention, clearly now to unite the country. Note the three things that David does. He encourages the tribes of the north and agrees with the request that he return to power. He encourages now by sending messengers to Yehuda that they should also be there to bring him back into power. And he also offers the head of Avshalom's army, Amasa himself, the general of Avshalom, one of the leaders of the revolt against David, he has the courage now to offer the position of chief of staff of the army specifically to the enemy and the person who led the revolt. Obviously, Yoav is not going to be happy with that, but we see in David's actions how he clearly wants to reunite the country. And again, we see another example of David's character, how he doesn't keep vendettas against his old enemies. He's doing everything possible to reunite the country and lead them in a proper way. Despite David's clear intentions that these actions should help the country, almost everything backfires. Because in his zeal for the northern tribes and Yehuda to bring them back together, a fight breaks out in the end of chapter 19 over who's going to lead the return of David. And now the northern tribes are fighting with Yehuda. And they're arguing who's going to be first to bring David back. It gets to a point that they're fighting so much that a certain person there, his name is Sheva ben Bichri, in light of these events, blows a shofar and says, "We're sick of all this." Perek Chaf, Pasuk Aleph. V'sham nikra ish b'liyahu u'shmo Sheva ben Bichri, ish imini. V'yitka b'shofar, he blows a shofar in rebellion. V'yomer, ein lanu chelek b'David v'lo nachala b'ven Yishai, ish lo ohalav Yisrael. We don't have any portion or connection anymore to David or to the house of Yishai. And everyone should go back to his tent. One way to understand the revolt of Sheva ben Bichri is to understand that he is against David returning into power, and instead, maybe he himself wants to go into power. Or maybe he, because he's from the tribe of Benjamin, wants to bring some remnant of the house of Shaul into power. However, it's possible to understand his revolt in a very different way. He's not necessarily against David becoming king. It could be that Sheva ben Bichri is saying, look what's happened here. Why do we need a monarchy if all the monarchy is bringing us a civil war? And that explains the connection between the end of chapter 19 and the beginning of chapter 20. It seems that Sheva ben Bichri has a very serious following. His statement alone would not be enough to begin a revolt. David takes this threat very seriously and puts the army together right away to try to put down the revolt. But the logic of the revolt is quite easy to understand. On the one hand, the monarchy, which we've established, it's been probably 30, 40 some years since Shaul became king, has brought a lot of good to the Jewish people. But on the other hand, if you look back over those 20, 30 years, in addition to having a monarchy and establishing a strong country, we've also introduced the problem of civil war and the strife between Yoav and Avner, which we saw earlier, and now between David and Avshalom, and all the people killed and all those civil wars and all that fighting. Because of that, many people reach the conclusion, who needs this monarchy at all? What's the point in it? And that might be a different way to understand the revolt of Shechem ben Bichri, not a revolt against David specifically. Of course, they don't want to accept David, but a revolt against the very concept of monarchy and possibly a return to what the situation was in Tamas Shoftim, let every tribe take care of itself. In light of this event, we'll get another snapshot of the relationship between Yoav and David. Recall that David had offered the leadership of the army to Amasa. Amasa was a general and one of the leaders of the revolt of Avshalom. The first job Amasa is given is to put down the revolt of Shechem ben Bichri. And therefore the king, in Pasuk Daled, verse 4, tells Amasa, gather the army, you have 3 days to get it done, and go help us against Shechem ben Bichri. Amasa calls out the army, and he doesn't make it in time. Meaning, we see in Pasuk Hey, that it seems that Amasa is unable to muster together enough support among the people to get the army together, or maybe Amasa himself might be against putting down this revolt. It's, again, quite unclear why Amasa is unable to accomplish his task. Then David tells Avishai, Yoav's brother, and one of his top generals, he tells him, if we don't put down this revolt of Shechem ben Bichri, we're going to be in big trouble. Meaning, it looks like the entire monarchy is going to fall apart. And therefore, he gives him the job to go and put down the revolt and chase Shechem ben Bichri and put down this insurrection. It's interesting to note that David calls upon Avishai to do this and not Yoav. Yoav would be a much more likely choice. Of course, Yoav doesn't miss this opportunity. And upon Zion, Yoav together with his men and Avishai chase after Shechem ben Bichri. As they're on their way up, they bump into Amasa, who was unable to get the army together. It's not clear whether they might think that Amasa is actually working for the other side. There's no doubt that Yoav does not trust Amasa. And therefore, in Psukim Tet and Yud, Yoav, as he's done before, tricks Amasa into coming close to him, and then he stabs him in the rib, just like he killed Avner earlier, and Amasa dies. The dead body is scaring the people and slowing down the attack, and therefore they move the dead body to the side of the road. And Avishai and Yoav do what they've done before, get the army together, surround Shechem ben Bichri in the cities hiding out at in Evel Beit M'chola, which is very close to Metula today, up north. Seems like Shechem ben Bichri sees what's happening, has to run away as far as possible. And then we have the famous story where the wise lady suggests to Yoav, instead of killing the whole city, I'll just cut off his head and bring you his head and take away the siege from our city because we have nothing to do with this revolt of this person. So Shechem ben Bichri is killed by this lady. The revolt of Shechem ben Bichri is put down. And as we find in the end of chapter 20, sure enough, Yoav is back in charge of the army again, in Pasuk Chav Gimel. Yoav is in charge of the army, Benao ben Yehoda in charge of the special unit called the Kreti and Pleti, and the person in charge of taxation. And we mentioned before, we don't just have the mention of the general here, we have the mention of David's cabinet, which forms closure on the entire unit. Now again, did Yoav do the right thing or the wrong thing? It's clear that Yoav in his own eyes did the right thing. It's clear that David isn't very happy with him, otherwise he would not have asked Avishai to lead the battle instead of Yoav himself. But nonetheless, Yoav returns to power, and it seems like David has no choice but to accept him. And we saw even earlier that whenever there's a situation where David doesn't know how to treat Yoav, when he killed Avner, we had the exact same situation, David says in public that he's disgusted by the behavior of Yoav, but nonetheless, let God judge him. Now, why David says, let God judge Yoav, and Yoav is not going to be punished by David himself, it could be simply for natural human reasons that how could David punish the general who is so loyal to him? It could also be, for the reason we mentioned before, that it's not really clear, is Yoav acting out of greed because he wants to be in power, and he is really the reason for all these civil wars, or is Yoav really a sincere, good person? Because David is not quite sure, and can't read into someone else's heart, therefore he says, leave that to God. Let God take care of that, and if God wants him punished, God will take care of that. He's not running away from responsibility, but because of the unclarity of the situation, because of his inability to really understand and decide, is Yoav a hero of the Jewish people, or is he in many ways an enemy of the people, causing all these civil wars? David HaMelech leaves that to God in his own lifetime. However, we'll see in the beginning of Sefer Melachim in Perek Vet, in David's last will and testament to his son Shlomo, before he takes power, David warns Shlomo, you better be careful of Yoav, and if he makes one move, make sure to get rid of him. We'll see why later on, because David is worried that even though he could handle Yoav, he's sure that Shlomo would be swallowed up by him. And therefore, he wants to make sure that Shlomo is not going to be controlled by Yoav, and gives him some very wise advice of how to prevent another civil war. That brings us to the end of the unit, which we described from chapter 9 to chapter 20. We also mentioned before a certain closure of this unit. As David now returns into power, he returns now to judge his people. He takes leadership. Yoav is back in charge of the army again. David has received his punishment. He lost his son Avshalom. He lost Amnon. In many ways, he lost Tamar. Later, he'll lose Adoniel. Also, the baby who was born to Bathsheba. That child died. David seems to have received his punishment. And from a prophetic point of view, this unit is now over. And the topic of Chet David Vonsho, David's sin, with the story of Oriachiti and his punishment, has now ended. And we can return now to a different topic. That brings up the question, when did the events in chapter 21 happen? In Perachaf Aleph, in chapter 21, we see the story about a famine in the time of David. And God tells David the reason why this famine is happening is because of an event that happened much earlier during the reign of Shaul, where Shaul mistreated the Givonim. And it's a very bizarre story, but David is told by God to listen to what the Givonim have complaining about. That's the reason for the famine. And David has to give over 7 of the descendants of Shaul to the Givonim to be executed in order to stop this famine that's happening. This story in itself is difficult, but in addition to that, it doesn't make sense that this story would be happening now, several decades later. If Am Yisrael is being punished for what Shaul did to the Givonim, it would make much more sense if this would be happening early in the reign of David, soon after Shaul lost power, but soon after the events. It wouldn't make sense it's happening some 10, 20, 30 years later, towards the end of the rule of David. We're going to suggest that the events in Perachaf Aleph happened much earlier, and Perachaf Aleph is going to begin a new unit of Nevuah, and no longer are we going to be reading the works of the Navi Natan. It's clear that the unit from chapter 9 to chapter 20, which was David's sin with Bathsheba and the aftermath and his punishment, that clearly is the work of Natan, because Natan is the Navi who confronted David with that sin and accused him and rebuked him. Now we're going to see the events in chapter 21 through 24, the last unit of the book. We're going to attribute it to the Navi God. In our next year, we'll have a better understanding of why, because we'll see God himself appearing in those events. We'll also prove that those events happened much earlier in David's life, not only the events in chapter 21, but also the events in chapter 22, 23, and 24. And therefore, at the end of the book of Shmuel, we have one last unit, which we're going to attribute to the Navi God, the one who we saw earlier, which will conclude after we found two units by Natan, the unit by Natan about the good years of David and his attempt to build a house for God and all the good things that David did by building his capital in Yerushalayim and bringing the Aron to Yerushalayim and wanting to build a Mikdash in Yerushalayim and the battles that he fought, and then the sin of David and his punishment in the second unit. Now, at the end of the book, we'll have one last unit by God. That'll be our topic in our next year. In our next year, we'll also discuss the relationship between the book of Shmuel and the book of Divrei Hayamim, which is worth dedicating an entire year to. After that, we'll have one last year, which we'll try to put the entire book together and try to appreciate who finally put together the book of Shmuel and possibly its deeper meaning. And we also have to talk about David and the book of Tehillim, which we'll probably discuss as an introduction to the book of Malachim and the connection between the book of Shmuel and the book of Malachim. There's a lot of shiurim which we have to still complete before the book of Shmuel is over, and as an introduction to the book of Sefer Malachim.